Focus on Females Radio Health.
This radio healthcare program is brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 5th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, March 27, 2010, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida 33679-2702. Thank you.
The content of the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is for informational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare show. If you think you may have a medical emergency, call your doctor or 911 immediately. Focus on Females does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, physicians, products, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on the radio show. Reliance on any information provided by Focus on Females or others appearing on the show at the invitation of Focus on Females is solely at your own risk. Now, it's time for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Here, we create clarity out of confusion and guide you through today's healthcare maze. Each week, we'll focus on a different medical topic with a guest expert answering your questions. Future topics and guests can be seen at www.focusonfemales.com. Call in between 12:30 and 1 p.m. on Sundays and present your case to our experts. To get involved with today's clinic, call now in Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Be proactive with your health. We're here to focus on you. And now, our host, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
The Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is on, and we thank you for listening. Today, we are tackling screening for breast cancer with guest expert, Dr. Tracy Holme, of SDI Radiology, radiologist for St. Joseph's Hospital in Tampa, Florida. But first, this radio show and the free annual Focus on Females Women's Healthcare Symposium, now the largest in the country with 1,800 women, is supported by the not-for-profit Focus on Females Education Foundation, whose mission is to create an interactive, dynamic, community-based healthcare safety net, making you an expert on your personal medical needs. The result? Better partnering with your existing doctor, leading to more effective office visits, faster results, and a reduced economic burden of avoidable medical and emergency care. We save lives and protect families through the immediate impact of health education. And as noted above, with me is Dr. Tracy Holme. Tracy, it's great to have you here today.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Tracy is a women's imaging expert, fellowship trained in mammography, breast ultrasound, breast MRI, and breast biopsies. She's a member of SDI Imaging Partners and practices at the St. Joseph's Women's Hospital Breast Center in Tampa, Florida. She grew up in Tampa and received her undergraduate degree in biology at UCLA in Los Angeles. She then returned to Tampa for medical school at the University of South Florida. She completed a radiology residency and fellowship in women's imaging at the University of Texas Southwestern in Dallas, Texas. Tracy's married to Matthew Holme, an attorney, and they live in South Tampa with their three beautiful children, Ian, Morgan, and Campbell. And they may be listening right now.
Yes, I hope so.
Okay. Okay, well, first I want to invite everybody listening out there to call in with their questions on breast cancer imaging and imaging as a screening device, as well as imaging questions on imaging for those women who have had breast cancer and maybe have had surgery for it or maybe not, but nevertheless are interested in how to monitor it and what the current state of the art is as far as monitoring the cancer using imaging techniques, of which Tracy is an expert. So we invite you, each and every one of you, to call, whether it be you as a patient or your husband or family member. Please, this is your opportunity to call in with your questions. Every question is a good question, and don't wait for us to perhaps review the question that you had wanted to ask. Don't wait. Pick up the phone now and do take the opportunity to ask your specific questions so we can specifically target and identify hopefully a breakthrough for you in understanding and managing this disease. And with that, our call-in number is 289-1860, 289-1860 in Hillsborough County. Outside of Hillsborough County, it's 877-969-8600, 877-969-8600. And with that, let's begin with asking the question, Tracy, what is a screening mammogram?
That's a very important question because so many women make an appointment and aren't exactly sure what type of imaging or how many views they should be obtaining. And so I think this is a very important thing that we clear up before we even discuss who should be getting a screening mammogram. The two different types of mammogram that you can obtain are, one is a screening mammogram and the other is what we call a diagnostic mammogram. Now, a screening mammogram is for a female or a male, actually, that has no symptoms. So you don't have a palpable abnormality and you don't have any suspicious type of bloody or clear nipple discharge, but you're just getting your annual mammogram with no complaints. And for that, you get a prescription from your referring doctor, either your family practice doctor or your OBGYN, and you make an appointment for a screening mammogram. You come to the facility and you get two views taken of each breast.
And that's very important.
Yes.
Two views, not
yes,
just one.
Yes, definitely. We take one view where you look from the top to the bottom of the breast and one where you look from one side to the other. And we include tissue that goes kind of into the armpit area because many women have tissue that extend into this armpit area. And that also is important for people to know because when we're doing monthly breast self-exams, you have to make sure that you include going out to the armpit area because there's normal breast tissue that extends out there. And that's normal anatomy for most women. So for the screening exam, you come in, you get two views, and you leave. And generally, patients do not get results of the screening exam on the day of the exam. And the reason for that is that there are so many women that are just coming in without symptoms. They're not necessarily even worried because they're just getting their annual exam. And for the radiologist to be as accurate as possible, they need to be reading them in a quiet, enclosed, dark room where they keep looking at the same images over and over without necessarily stopping to tell someone, okay, this study's okay, you're okay. It would just take too long to get through all the studies and it would make the radiologist less accurate.
Some tell me you've been asked that before.
Yes, because ideally I think most radiologists that read mammograms would love to give the results of all kinds of mammograms to everyone right then. But fortunately in Tampa, and especially at our breast center, we have strived to, for the diagnostic mammograms, that's when a patient has a problem. They either have a palpable abnormality, they have a history of breast cancer, or they have some other problem that needs to be solved, something that might raise a question as to whether they really have breast cancer, and we need to decide, do they possibly have breast cancer or do they not? And that patient comes in typically more worried because there's a question. And so for those people, we always try and give the results immediately so that they can leave and not be worried for another 2 to 5 days before they get the results from their physicians.
Right. So the diagnostic mammogram, the mammogram was ordered for a specific purpose, that is to evaluate potential mass or in the patient who's already had breast cancer, the status of that cancer, of that nodule or mass. So that's a different, it's a different indication for that mammogram. And in that case, there's a more rapid turnaround as far as the result of that test.
Yes. And the one other reason that you would have a diagnostic mammogram is if you came in for your annual two-view of each breast screening exam, and then we saw something and called you back. And this brings up an important topic. There, we, as radiologists, we read to be careful. Number one, we're looking for a breast cancer, and we absolutely do not want to miss one. So if there's any question, if part of the tissue got overlapped and you can't see an area well enough, and that's really the most common reason to call someone back, something just didn't compress well enough. So you get called back, we compress it out, we see everything's normal, and you leave. So just because you're called back from a screening mammogram, there's no reason for dire panic.
So this is more of an abundance of caution issue.
Yes, it is. And so more people get called back and have nothing wrong with them than get called back and have cancer. Mm-hmm. So it's a matter of just being responsible, saying, hey, they probably didn't get it all. All the tissue that goes into the armpit, maybe we didn't see it all and it's coming off the edge of the film. Maybe the area behind the nipple looks a little bit darker than the other side. As we all take pictures out in the real world, you can see where, oh, you thought you were going to get this great picture, and you take it, and it's a little darker than you would like. It's kind of the same thing. It could turn out a little bit darker in one area than another. And we have been able to reduce our callback rate from the screening exams with the advent of digital mammography.
How frequently do you use a digital? Well, first explain, if you would, briefly what digital mammography is, and then how frequently do you use it?
Well, digital mammography is it's really the same difference as using film when you take a picture out in the real world, just your avid picture taker, and then when we've gone to digital cameras. So the resolution is better, and fortunately with mammography, the radiation exposure is also less. So we've limited the radiation exposure with digital mammography. The exam time is quicker. The storage of the films is better because they're stored on the computers. So we've dramatically reduced the amount of lost films, which we need for comparison and things like that. And we've also decreased radiation, and we can see better. We can see much better through very dense breasts. We also can manipulate the films ourselves. We have a magnifying glass inherent within the computer. We're able to change what we call the window and the level, which is really contrast and how white or dark something is. So we're able to manipulate a lot of things without calling the patient back many of the times. So that's dramatically reduced the callback rate as well. And so we do use digital mammography with everybody, with screening exams and diagnostic exams. Okay. It's really accepted now, and it's most places have changed
considered
to digital.
The state of the art.
Yes. Okay. And so that's been very helpful for us. And as I mentioned with this digital mammography, one of the things I talked about was that it has decreased in the lost films. And the importance of prior films cannot be overemphasized when we're discussing screening mammography. The reason is we start screening when we're 40 years old, as per the American Cancer Society. And often people get a baseline mammogram a little bit earlier, especially in the Tampa Bay area, just to get a good baseline, because the theory is when you're after 40 years old, you really shouldn't be developing new fibroadenomas. And a lot of the things—
Which are benign?
Benign tumors in the breast, benign solid masses in the breast. Mm-hmm. That, you know, when you have it at 20, that's normal. Mm-hmm. But at 40, once you get a solid mass in the breast, we really have to prove that it's benign. Mm-hmm. And you get into an area where then you have to biopsy something. So if you have your baseline mammogram, and then we can say it's stable, whenever we say that something, it has to have benign features, meaning that it doesn't have spiculations, it doesn't have ugly associated calcifications with it, things like that. So as long as it looks benign, and we can say it's stable for 2 years, then we give it a benign category, and you can be in the category where you come back every year, only once, you know, every annually.
So having the digital record is a big advantage to go back and review.
Yes, because then, as I said, we don't have so many patients with lost films and things. If they've taken their films with them and they lose them, they can call up and say, can we get those printed again? Can we get another disc of those films? And it's no problem because they're stored in the archives.
A lot easier on the patient.
Yes.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break and come right back with more on screening for breast cancer. This is the Focus on Females Radio Health Care Clinic with guest expert Dr. Tracy Homey. We'll be right back.
This radio healthcare program is brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 5th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, March 27, 2010, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida 33679-2702. Thank you.
Do your eyes have a foreign body sensation or are scratchy and sandy? Do they burn, sting, or itch, or are heavy and tired? Maybe your eyes are sensitive to light or your eyelids achy and sore. Have you seen countless doctors and still can't find relief? Have they told you, sorry, but you'll have to live with this and nothing can be done for you? Well, first, it's likely you suffer from dry eye. And second, don't stand for those answers anymore. Just because someone else doesn't understand your dry eye problems, go to the only eye doctor in Central Florida that specializes exclusively in dry eye and related diseases. Meet with Dr. Stephen Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where you will be given up to 2 hours of face-to-face time with the doctor to get at the root cause of your dry eye pain, fluctuating vision, and redness, plus begin targeted therapy right away. Haven't you waited long enough?
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
And welcome back to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. And I just wanted, actually, before we get back into screening for breast cancer, invite each listener out there to take the opportunity to attend our upcoming 5th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium. It is Saturday, March 27th at the Tampa Convention Center. It is absolutely free. Our keynote speaker will be Dr. Judy Genshaf, USF President. Our MC and honorary chair is Stacey Scheibel of News Channel 8, and she, of course, is the news anchor. It is a full-day event. As I mentioned in the intro, we are now the largest women's health symposium in the country. We have 22 different seminars, including cardiac disease, colon cancer, cervical, ovarian, uterine cancer, nutrition and cancer prevention, obesity in women, screening for breast cancer, which in which case Dr. Tracy Homey will be there and to spend time with each and every one of you discussing this, as well as migraines and other headaches, fertility and family, menopause, bladder incontinence, osteoporosis, sleep disorders, breast cancer, reversing dry eye, heart care and disease prevention for women, skin cancer, diabetes, raising your child without going crazy, allergies and asthma, gynecologic cancer, what you need to know, as well as financial wellness and looking more youthful without general anesthesia. All topics available for free. In addition, we have health screenings. We have fitness classes, 8 different types of fitness classes, including yoga, Pilates, kickboxing, Tai Chi, stretching, Zumba aerobics, circuit training, and resistance training, all by certified trainers, as well as chair massages. And we'd like to, again, invite everyone to take advantage of it. You can and you should register either online at focusonfemales.com, or you may pick up a brochure, which are now being disseminated throughout the community, and you can fill out the panel and on the brochure and mail it to the office address on the bottom. So please take the opportunity to make the most of this day, and there's nothing like the immediate impact of healthcare education in transforming the life of yourself and your family. Okay, back with screening for breast cancer. And Tracy, let's talk about indications for mammography.
I think most people are aware now that the American Cancer Society recommends that women at this time screen from 40 years old and older annually. Now, there are some exceptions to this rule. One of these would be women that are at a higher risk for breast cancer. Patients with first-degree relatives, like a mother or an aunt or a sister. And so women that have
who've had breast cancer.
Yes. Women. So if you've had, if your mother had breast cancer and she was diagnosed at 40, we actually recommend that you begin screening with digital mammography 10 years earlier to the date that she got diagnosed. That would be when you're 30 years old. And that's to ensure that we were able to catch a breast cancer in someone that's a higher risk at a, at an earlier stage. One of the other groups that I feel we don't screen or don't necessarily know are a certain genetic line of males, and that's the Ashkenazi Jewish genetic line. They have a much higher risk of breast cancer than the general population, and those males should be screening with mammography or definitely annual breast exam. If there's not enough tissue to actually image, they should just be very, very aware that they have a higher risk of breast cancer, and if they feel anything at all, to come in immediately.
And you, I think this is an important point, too. As you mentioned, the Ashkenazi Jewish male has increased risk, but I think that underscores the point that males can get this disease as well as females, even if you're not Ashkenazi Jewish.
Definitely, yes. And we see that a lot, especially in really heavy smokers, because as we know, smoking increases your risk of virtually every type of cancer in the body. So, so you know, if you have all the types of risk factors, or maybe you're a male and your mother had breast cancer, your sister may have had breast cancer, you're a heavy smoker, you know, you really need to be careful, because the male breast is it tends to be much smaller than a woman's breast. And so therefore, there's not as much room before it gets to the chest wall and before you get into some real trouble.
Okay, good point. Okay, let's keep looking at other indications.
Okay.
Or high risks.
One of the other things is, obviously, if you've had breast cancer in the past and you've had a lumpectomy or something like that, I find that most people that are currently diagnosed get the full discussion of that they should continue screening with the remainder of the breast tissue on either side with mammography, but also with breast MRI. Many of these patients, their insurance companies will pay with for annual screening with mammography and breast MRI. But I find that the patients that have been diagnosed 10 years ago aren't really aware of this, and they're just screening with mammography when they actually could be candidates for mammography and breast MRI.
Right. And let's analyze this a little deeper now. Mm-hmm. So if you've had breast cancer before, tell us the why breast MRI in addition to the mammography is so important.
Okay, that's a great question, because many people have already heard that MRI is very sensitive. It's one of the most sensitive tools that we can use to look for breast cancer. And so most people say, well, why can't I just get an MRI? Why do I need a mammogram? And it's actually one of the hardest things as a radiologist to get across to the patients, that it's not enough. The reason being that when we look for breast cancer, there's two things that are important in an exam. And one of them is sensitive, how sensitive it is that it picks up anything that could be abnormal. But the other thing is how specific it is. Is it a breast cancer? Just because we picked up 20 things in the breast, it doesn't mean that we want to biopsy 20 things or that a patient could undergo that. So then we need things to help us tease out what's benign and what could be still suspicious. And the mammogram helps us do that. The mammogram shows us lymph nodes, because most lymph nodes look bad on MRI. So we're able to look at the mammogram and say, no, that little round thing's a lymph node, not going to touch that. And things like that. So it helps us to determine what is real on MRI. But the other thing is that MRI is not good for the smallest of small early cancer that's contained within the ducts, or ductal carcinoma in situ, which is pretty much within the ducts, or that's the way we're thinking mainstream now, that it's a contained form of cancer. And that it often, this is most often in the form of calcifications. And breast MRI does not evaluate calcifications, which is often the earliest form of cancer, whereas mammography is exceptional at picking up the tiniest flecks of calcifications. And calcifications on a mammogram, to clarify, because so many people also come in and say, what is the calcification? I hear about this all the time. Calcifications on a mammogram look like the finest grains of sand or grains of salt that we look for. And they can just be, you know, 0.3 millimeters, very tiny. And the earliest stage of breast cancer, where you have a little bit of tissue taken out and you're completely finished. And that's what the gift of screening has done. That's when we say screening mammograms save lives. That's how. If you're wondering where that statement comes from, because we don't wait for that cancer to grow up from a millimeter and until it's 2 centimeters in size. When it's a little fleck of calcifications, we biopsy it, and then they go in and take a centimeter of tissue around that area, and you're good to go.
So ultimately, the mammogram actually offers complementary information that the MRI does not give you, the radiologist, to help differentiate lesions.
Yes, exactly right.
So together, it's a much more powerful imaging set of tools to accurately, as best as possible, accurately diagnose an abnormality.
Yes. And the other question is, then why doesn't everyone get an MRI? And the reason for that is because it is so sensitive. Virtually every woman's has several things, like 4 to 20 to 50 to 100 things that will show up in the breast. And it's just not a good screening tool for people that have a lower risk. It's expensive. It's time consuming for the radiologist. It's time consuming for the patient. It's, you know, the patient has to stay still for a while. And we do inject contrast. And so it is a great study when we know somebody's at a higher risk. And then we take the time to tease out these, you know, 20 to 30 things that are in the breast and decide what could be cancer. Do we watch it, or has it reached the threshold where we really need to biopsy this with MRI guidance?
Okay. All right. Very good. How about the category of women who have had a pediatric malignancy treated with radiation, for example, like a patient with Hodgkin's when they were a youth? I understand they have increased incidence of breast cancer as they age.
Yes, and the reason for that is that the breast bud that's present at birth, you have a small breast bud, and oftentimes actually little babies, the parents will bring them in because they're 2 weeks old, and they can actually palpate something in the nipple, and that's the breast bud that can be big at birth from the estrogen from the mother. And then once that estrogen passes through the baby's body completely, then their breast size goes down to what we expect a normal infant's to be. But so as a teenager or a prepubertal patient, the breast bud is very sensitive to many things, one of them being radiation. And that has been shown to increase that patient's risk of breast cancer as they develop. Not just being treated with radiation for Hodgkin's, but also a long time ago, patients with thoracic scoliosis, those were followed with serial chest x-rays, two-view chest x-rays, lateral and AP views, for several years, possibly every 6 months or every 3 months. And those patients are also at an increased risk because their breast buds were exposed to those chest x-rays so much. The other thing that the breast bud in teenagers is sensitive to are biopsies. So we want to be careful. If a patient shows up with a well-circumscribed solid mass and they're, 15 years old, we want to be careful when we biopsy that, if we even need to biopsy it. Because more often than not, literally 99.9 times out of 100, that's going to be a fibroadenoma, which is a benign tumor that can usually just be left alone. But if that gets really close to the breast bud and we biopsy that and take a chunk of the breast bud out, the patient can end up with a lopsided breast and a breast that doesn't develop normally because half of the root of it got taken out at a critical time.
Right.
And so, definitely, the pubertal breasts. And that's why it's important to go for your imaging and for your biopsies to people that are very well experienced with this so that they don't just see, oh, well, there's a mass, let's biopsy it. You need to know the subtle nuances of breast cancer when we get to any of the extremes with people, either dealing with men or high-risk patients or teenagers or babies, things like that. We need to you need to make sure that you're going to somebody that's very experienced in the field so that you don't have unnecessary procedures or the wrong procedures done for you.
Okay, very good. Now, let's see. I've got a there's something called the Gale model, and it asks some questions. I guess what are things that increases the patient's risk for breast cancer? And as we mentioned before, does the woman have a medical history of any breast cancer or of ductal carcinoma? Increases the risk. What's the woman's age? The great majority of cases occur in women older than 50. We just talked before cases that are younger than that are in their 40s or even younger. With woman's age at the time of her first menstrual period, women having their first period before age 12 have a slightly higher risk. And what was the woman's age at the birth of her first child? The older the woman was, the higher the risk. Now, do you are these issues? I guess ultimately, it's really the proof's in the pudding. You evaluate the patient and determine if there's issues there when you evaluate the result of the test.
Well, most doctors that deal with breast cancer, often the gynecologists, but also breast surgeons. If you want to know your health, your risk for breast cancer, and some of these things are sparking your interest, like I began my menstrual cycle at 10 years old, and now I'm older than 50, and my second cousin has breast cancer. Am I really at increased risk by this Gale model? And you can make an appointment with a breast surgeon that can assess this. There also, I believe, there are some online tools that tell you these risk factors with the Gale model, and you can insert them in, and you get a score for this. And overall, basically, if you have a greater than 20% lifetime risk of breast cancer by this Gale model, then you need to be careful. It doesn't mean you're going to get breast cancer, but it just means you need to be responsible. You're not a person that should ever miss mammograms. Not that anybody should, but these people should take it very seriously. And also, when you have a greater than 20% risk for breast cancer by the Gale model, you are often a candidate for the annual screening with both mammography and breast MRI.
Uh-huh.
And that's what I think it's important. That's what I think this show and this avenue of Focus on Females and everything is so important, because so many people don't know that. They don't know that there is a Gale model, there is something to assess their risk, and that they may be out there and have these tools available to them, and insurance companies willing to pay for this, and they're not getting the studies that they need.
And the Gale model, for those people that want to go online and read about it, is Gale, spelled G-A-I-L, correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure there's a lot of information there online.
Yes.
Okay. All right, very good. And we're going to take a quick break and be right back with more on the Focus on Females Radio Health Care Clinic. Call with your questions, 289-1860, 289-1860, outside of Hillsboro, 877-969-8600. Be right back.
The Focus on Females Radio Health Care Clinic. Call now in Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. More in a few moments.
America's digital goddess, Kim Komando here. Cameras, camcorders, home electronics, HDTVs, computers, online security, privacy, Facebook, MySpace, Blu-ray, and MP3s. Phew, it's a good thing I'm so very gentle on your ears. If it's in your digital life, it's right here on your radio. After all, they don't call me America's digital goddess for nothing.
Kim Komando, Sunday afternoon at 2 on Talk Radio 860 WGUL.
This radio healthcare program is brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 5th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, March 27, 2010, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida 33679-2702. Thank you. Your host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is ophthalmologist and eye surgeon, Dr. Stephen L. Maskin. Dr. Maskin is the medical director of the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, the proud sponsor of today's show. At the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, Dr. Maskin specializes in solving difficult dry eye and cornea disorders with patients traveling from over 35 states and 5 continents for his evaluation. Dr. Maskin manages these dry eye disorders using innovative medical and surgical therapies, including the use of placenta-derived amniotic membrane, a new patent-pending natural eye lubricant to provide relief for dry eye sufferers, an exciting new procedure to unblock obstructed tear glands, and a topical cure for eye surface cancer. Dr. Maskin has been successfully managing difficult dry eye cases for over 20 years and is board-certified, fellowship-trained, and a fellow of the American College of Surgeons and American Academy of Ophthalmology. He's been selected a best doctor in America every year from 2000 through 2009 and as an America's top ophthalmologist by Consumers Research Council of America. We hope the Focus on Females education programs, including this show, will help you and your family find the health care that works for you. Focus on Females believes in saving lives and protecting families. And please, visit drmaskin.com, and if you have not found relief for your painful red dry eyes, come in to see Dr. Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where comfortable eyes lead to restored lives.
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
And welcome back to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. We are focusing on screening for breast cancer with guest expert Dr. Tracy Holme, radiologist with SDI Imaging Partners. And we were talking about risk factors for breast cancer, which of course dovetails into when to get your screening tests for breast cancer. Let's talk a little bit about the genetic markers for breast cancer, the BRCA gene, and I guess the P10 and TP53 gene, and how that information is used as far as deciding when to go ahead with screening tests for breast cancer.
Well, all of these markers do indicate an elevated risk of breast cancer above the average population. And we check for those kind of markers when a patient seems to have an elevated risk because of a strong family history, like their mother and a sister or mother and two aunts and things like that. And we're able to see a pattern also with the grandmothers and maybe a father, where you can see where it can be trickling down through the family tree. And that suggests one of the known genes that are associated with breast cancer. And that's the ones that you've already mentioned, the BRCA1, BRCA2, P10, and the TP53. The other thing to note is not only are some of these genes associated with an elevated risk of breast cancer, but they also have an elevated risk of certain other cancers, such as ovarian cancer. So once you've found out that you have one of these genes, then you should also be screening with pelvic ultrasounds and things like that.
You also mentioned on break that the nature of the disease, the breast cancer, is different if you're positive for one of these markers, more aggressive disease.
Yes, it can tend to be much more aggressive.
Does that indicate more frequent evaluations for monitoring?
Definitely. This type of patient should probably be followed actually every 6 months with one of these genes. And then it also gives strong implications for the daughters. If any of these patients that have daughters and sons, they definitely have to be at a heightened alert. And we would watch, let's say, a patient that has a daughter, then the daughter gets pregnant. You'd be very careful with these patients as their breasts are being exposed to heightened hormones, that we're watching carefully that nothing shows up and that they're carefully monitored. So these people that appear to have a higher risk because of family history, and oftentimes patients that are that have a high risk maybe just have a mother, but then they got breast cancer and they really want to know whether they have the gene because the implications of other family members, daughters and such. Those people can opt to have their breast cancers tested to see if they are genetically positive.
And that's how it's tested. It's tested on the tissue. It's not a blood test.
It can be both.
Okay.
It can actually be both. And the one other thing to mention is that these are the known genes that are associated with breast cancer. It does not mean that if you don't have one of these genes that your breast cancer is not genetically passed on. There are certainly other genes that carry a breast cancer mutation, and those are the people that their mother had it and they have it, but they're not BRCA1, BRCA2, or any of these other gene positive. So there are other genetic traits that are passed on in the form of breast cancer that we do not know of, but maybe they're less aggressive and they don't penetrate virtually every generation.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that this brings up is, what if you don't have a family history of breast cancer? Are you in the clear? Are you able to kind of relax? And unfortunately, that's not really the case. Some people, the people that often I find that don't get mammograms, they say, well, I have nobody in my history ever, nobody's ever had it. We're not people that get breast cancer. And I should caution that approximately 70% of the people we diagnose didn't have a family history of breast cancer. So that does imply that there are environmental triggers as we go along that are creating breast cancer in that first generation. You kind of have to figure it starts somewhere, doesn't it? So,
So if you have a clean family history, that's nice, but it doesn't absolve you of having a risk for this disease or getting this disease. How about the elderly? Let's say no family history. Let's say a woman is 65, 70, 75. What is the thinking as far as ongoing screening for these women?
Well, they're definitely still in the age group to be screened.
Mm-hmm.
I think for women 80 and older,
mm-hmm.
That becomes a little bit more questionable. And we find that these studies are actually being led out of Sweden by the father of mammography, so to speak, Laszlo Tabar. He's the doctor that originally proved that screening mammograms save lives. He did a 3-county trial in Sweden where the government wanted to study which age groups and things like that would be saved. And so in Sweden, actually now, 80 years old and over, they go back to every other year screening.
Okay.
And so it kind of brings up the topic that was recently recommended by the government task force that we didn't necessarily need to start screening at 40, but at 50. And I would have to say I haven't seen the exact data of that study, but I would say based on my practice over the last 15 to 20 years, that would not be the case. I mean, regularly do we get 40 to 45-year-old women with breast cancer, and I can say that's weekly, if not 36, 35. I've seen it as early as 29.
Mm-hmm.
And so my experience would tell me definitely don't delay that screening, but maybe we could, if we wanted to revisit it, we could revisit the older end. The thought being, how are the people that get diagnosed when they're 89, they may end up dying from something else before the breast cancer actually was able to kill them, so to speak. So
ultimately, every patient has to be individualized, and the decision of getting a screening test and what test is ultimately between that patient and their doctors.
Yes. But right now it is accepted that 40 years and older, you begin annual screening mammography on a yearly basis.
And that age would drop if you have other risk factors which indicate a greater likelihood or risk for developing breast cancer at yet an earlier age.
Yes.
Like genetic mutations you talked about, history of irradiation for a pediatric malignancy in the chest area, and some of the other scoliosis, I guess you said,
yes.
Increased x-rays and tests for childhood scoliosis and so forth. Very good. And again, I want to remind everyone to take the opportunity to call in with your question here. We still have about 10 minutes. We are at 289-1860, 289-1860 in Hillsborough County. Outside of Hillsborough County, you can call us toll-free, 877-969-8600. And we are streaming live over the Internet. So take advantage of those of you that are streaming live. Call in with your questions about breast cancer screening. So let's see. We talked about a lot of different things. Well, let me give you a clinical scenario. What if you got a mammogram 4 months ago and it was clear, but now you feel a lump? What should you do? Should you go back and wait till your next mammogram? Should you go back and see your doctor?
That's a great question. The answer is definitely not wait till your next mammogram, because your next mammogram wouldn't be due for 8 more months. And so that's the one exception where if you have no family history and you're just an annual screener, that's when you change. You've had the screening exam and everything was normal. But breast cancer can develop into a palpable lump where we didn't see it on the mammogram, but then it shows up 6 months later. So if you feel something, that triggers you to call your doctor, and now you need a script for a diagnostic mammogram.
What happens in that scenario? Does this lump develop so rapidly because of secondary inflammation around that cancer? Or
often, yes. There's most often a breast cancer in the breast causes very severe aggravation, and we call it desmoplasia or scarring. And the breast starts to become very angry and pull and retract around it. And that can be the first sign of a breast cancer. I've seen breast cancers 3 millimeters, but on the mammogram, it looks like it's 4 centimeters because there was so much scarring and pulling. Mm. And that breast just happened to get exceptionally aggravated by it. But the other thing is sometimes when you feel a lump, the lump actually feels bigger than the cancer is for that same reason, because there's scarring around it. So you have the cancer with all a ball of scarring around it, kind of trying to wall it off. It's your immune system walling this cancer off from the rest of your breast. And so, again, don't be alarmed by the size or the feel, but you need a mammogram. And even if your mammogram was negative, the other important thing to note is that mammography does not pick up 100% of breast cancer. And about 10% of it can only be seen on ultrasound. And so that's why when you have a palpable abnormality, you need to have a mammogram and an ultrasound, because certain cancers will just be picked up with ultrasound.
All right, which introduces ultrasound for breast as a screening technique. So if you don't have a palpable, that is something you can feel, nodule or abnormality, then when else is the ultrasound used for? Denser tissue?
It can be used for dense tissue if we see something, or if we see something on the mammogram. Ultrasound is usually only a diagnostic tool, and that means you have a problem. You feel something, we see a mass on your mammogram, and we need to decide whether it's a cyst or whether it's solid. But generally, with dense breasts mammographically, sometimes it helps to do ultrasound, but really it brings up more problems than it solves. Because, it's a little bit like MRI. We see so many complex cysts and complicated cysts and things like that. And by, on a technical study, really those should all be aspirated. So, again, now if we've scanned all the breasts in everybody, are we going to start aspirating 20 cysts in each breast for everyone? So that's where it does become a little bit of a gray area. Now, I think it could be considered, we could use a little bit for screening. Let's say an extremely dense breast in a patient that has a family history in their mother or their sister. So now we really do have to heighten things, and we are going to aspirate those cysts in that patient because we really need to be careful in her. But in general, it's a diagnostic tool. So for a lot of times we see mistakes in the ordering where we get a patient that comes in for a screening mammogram and a screening bilateral ultrasound. And that really doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. You either have a screening mammogram and you have no problems, or you have a diagnostic mammogram with an ultrasound because we're trying to solve two problems.
All right, very good. And if that should be clear to everyone listening out there, if not, then call in and ask your question. I have to tell you that when I was a third-year medical student, which is when you, of course, you change from listening to lectures in lecture halls to starting to evaluate patients and see patients. The very first patient that I was sent to evaluate in my third year at medical school was a woman with breast cancer. And back then, and maybe right now even still, they don't tell you the diagnosis when you go in to evaluate the patient or to begin the interview with the patient. And so I'll never forget, she had a hospital gown on, and I asked her why she was here. And she said that, oh, there's a little bump on my chest. Well, I couldn't imagine what that could be. And after we finished the interview and began the examination, she took off her hospital gown, and her whole left breast was ulcerated and had gotten infected. I couldn't tell you how much pussy discharge was coming from this ulcerated, obviously cancer breast, which brings to the point of denial and how it is important to try and be as objective as possible in understanding the need for recognizing why we do screening examinations, and that there's no reason why things should ever, ever get to that point. I just share that personal experience, and we're here today to talk about catching these diseases at an early stage.
Yeah, if we're just responsible and just go through the motions of doing what you're supposed to do, even if you're afraid to hear the results, if we diagnose it early, we can definitely save your life.
All right, so what if a woman has breast pain? Does that necessarily indicate breast cancer or risk for breast cancer?
No, and that's a good question, because wouldn't that be great? If breast pain were a symptom of breast cancer, we could just say, hey, when your breast hurts, come on in. And so unfortunately, you know, breast cancer is very common. It's most likely related to fibrocystic change, and it often cycles with the menstrual cycle. And the more your breasts are exposed to hormones, they become very tender and things like that. But generally, breast cancer is not associated with pain, and so we can't rely on that.
Okay. Tracy, we're wrapping things up now. I'd like perhaps if you could summarize about screening for breast cancer. How do we know that mammograms save lives?
Well, that has definitely been proven that mammograms do save lives, as I explained with the Tri-County study in Sweden, and we've seen it in our everyday practices. You know, for the last 20 years, I've seen it. And so what I'd like to leave you with is that screening is for asymptomatic patients. So if you feel something and you've already been given the script from your doctor with a screening mammogram, and you all of a sudden feel a lump, don't do yourself the disservice by going in with the masses and just hoping that a technologist or somebody's going to relay that to the doctor and that your cancer is not going to be missed. Call your doctor and say, hey, I feel something now. I need to get myself upgraded to a diagnostic where I'm going to get the attention of a diagnostic workup. So there is a definite difference between the diagnostic mammogram and the screening mammogram. Screening mammograms are exceptional in asymptomatic women, and they have been proven to save lives.
Excellent. I'd like to thank my guest, Dr. Tracy Holmey. And once again, I'd like to thank each and every one of you for listening in this week. Next week on the Focus on Females Radio Health Care Clinic, we're going to tackle stomach ulcers and NSAIDs, such as aspirin, Motrin, Advil, and the like. And my guest expert will be Dr. Jürgen Nord from USF. In the meantime, this is Dr. Steve Maskin wishing each and every one of you an excellent and healthy week. See you next week.
The Focus on Females healthcare education programs are for you. Visit our free 5th annual Focus on Females Women's Healthcare Symposium, March 27th, 2010, at the Tampa Convention Center, and every Sunday from 1 to 2 p.m. for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.